So the topic for today is anatomy of a blast, understanding the shofar. And what the reason why I think this is an incredibly important topic over here is that often we open up the machzor. We'll be, so Be'ezras Hashem, this coming Thursday, Friday, we'll be opening up our machzor, we'll be looking into our tefillos, and we'll be seeing a number of things. And we should realize that the prayers that we have and the formulation of what we are doing is very specific. There was a development, there was a growth into what it is today, and it's sometimes very helpful to understand the underpinnings of that. And it's not always easy when looking at a very long musaf to understand where it's all coming from. And particularly today, I'd like to concentrate and focus on the Tekiyas Shofar, or the Shofar that we see throughout, before musaf, during musaf, after musaf, where it came from, how it's formulated in the way it is. Because even if somebody's going through the Daf Yomi, even if a person's going through the Gemara, one doesn't necessarily get a coherent picture just from learning the Gemaras over there as to how that translates into the specifics in terms of halacha. And even when one's going through Shulchan Aruch, the different sections of the Shofar are also found in different simanim, in fact. So it's hard to get an overall picture. So the goal today in the next 40 minutes is going to be trying to understand where the shofar blowing as we have it is. So what I try to do was, on page number one, is just to get a sense of all the shofar blowings you have in a musaf. So you'll see that in the top right and left are the blasts before musaf. We have the tekiah shvarim trua three times, tekiah shvarim tekiah three times, and then finally tekiah trua tekiah three times. So that's what's considered 30 blasts before musaf. 30 because the shvarim and trua count as two over there. So that's what we'll have before musaf. That's when the Baal Tekiah says the bracha. That's when we're all asked not to speak until the very end. That's when we encounter the shofar now first. Then we encounter now in the young Israel. Actually, we encounter it earlier. We encounter it during the Salim Shmona Esrei in the same pattern that we would during the Chazaras Hashatz. And that is at the end of Malchios. We have again a set. The end of Zichronos on the bottom right. And then on Shofros, we have again another set of Shofros. But notice something interesting, that they're different to the way it was formulated beforehand. Right? Just to point out that when it was before the Musaf, they were in groups. Right? They were in groups of Tekiah Shvarim Trua Tekiah, what's colloquially known as Tashrat, and then Tashat, and then Tarat. Right? The groups were individual groups. Here we have a mixture. The three lines are a mixture of all three. Both by Malchios, both by Zichronos, and by Shofros. And then finally, at the end of the davening, in the middle of the Kaddish over there, we have the remaining Tekiyos, which in some shuls will be 40 blasts, 30 and a 10. Or for instance, in the Young Israel, we'll be only having 10 there, because we've already had the extra in the Silent Shemona Esrei. So the question is, are these on the same level? Where did these come from? Did these develop at the same time? Why is it in such a formula? Why are there different ways of doing it? That's the question we have before in front of us. So let's start with the very basic kernel. We're going to try to work our way outwards. What does the Torah require of us on a Rosh Hashanah? What does the Torah require in terms of shofar requirements? Right. So the Torah requires blowing of shofar. But the question is, so to what degree is the Torah requiring us to do of all of these? So starting point is the following. The starting point is a Mishnah the starting point is the Chumash, but the Mishnah is formulating an interesting way of understanding the Torah, which we're going to see the Psukim in just a moment. This is on page one, or the actual page, which is enabled one, in source one. The Mishnah says the following. Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, this is Daf Lama Gimel and Beis, where most of the halachas over here are found. Thank you very much. Seder Tekiyos, the order of the blasts, Shalosh al shalosh, ashel shalosh shalosh, three of three threes. Shir tekiya kishalosh truas, shir trua kishalosh shavavas. In a moment, we're not going to discuss the length right now. If we have a moment, we'll come back to the end. So Rashi explains, what does this mean? This three of three threes. Rashi explains directly on that. Gemara said it to Kios. By the way, just a guide. When I make these source sheets, there's different fonts for different stages of Mefarshim. Okay, so the Gemara is always going to be in that Gemara font. Rashi is going to be in a Rashi font. And as you go on, you'll see that there'll be a different font for Rishonim and Achronim, just to get a sense of which era we're in, okay? Just to appreciate where we're coming from. It's not all one level. So here we have the Gemara. The Gemara tells us, which is effectively the Mishnah, three of three threes. Rashi says, Seder Zekiyos Shalosh, Achas L'Malchuyos, V'Achas L'Zichronos, V'Achas L'Shofros. We need to have three times where the Shofar is blown. That's one of the threes. And during each one, Rashi says, Shalosh, 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 Tekiya, V'Trua, V'Tekiya, L'Kol Achas, V'Achas. That at the end of each of the three major blessings, in the middle of the Shmoneh Esrei, we need to have three blasts accompanying it. Okay? So at this point in time, if you were to be asked, how much is the requirement, how many blasts do we need to hear on Rosh Hashanah at this point in time, what would you say?
Nine.
Right, just we need to start off minimalistically. Nine. We need to have three at the end. Well, Rashi is interpreting over here. Three at the end of the first bracha, three at the end of the second bracha, and three at the end of the third bracha. That's all we have over here. Now, by the way, notice that Rashi is interpreting. Rashi is telling us that it goes when? In the brachas. That's not in the Mishnah. Right? The Mishnah doesn't talk about where it goes. It just says 333, right? Okay, just point number one. So now, that's the starting point. How do we know this? How do we know that we really need to have these nine blasts? So the Gemara comments on the following. The Gemara is actually quite lengthy, so I try to take the most succinct section which relates this. The Gemara is following immediately the Mishnah on source 2. Uminayin shepshuta lefoneha. How do we know that there needs to be a pshuta? What's a pshuta? It's a tekiah because it's straight. It's simple. How do we know we need to have a simple blast before it? Before what?
The Truah.
Because the way the Torah talks about Rosh Hashanah only talks about Yom Truah. We're going to see in just a moment in the Gemara. It's called a day of Truah. That's what we know. So the Gemara is now expanding that. How do we know that the Truah needs to be preceded by a pshuta, a straight blast? Can you see the expansion over here? So it says the Gemara, Tamalama Vahavata Shofar Truah. You shall pass, or you shall blow a shofar of Truah. And as Rashi explains, just dropping down to the second box over here, Va'avarta, says Rashi, Pshuta Mashma. What does it mean you shall pass over? It means you shall do a simple blast. Ha'avarta kol echad. Ha'avarta is the notion of one blast, of one simple idea, simple blast. The Gemara continues in source 2, first line. Minayin shepshuta la'acharea. How to know that same Truah is followed by a tekiah? You shall pass a shofar. And Rashi explains, just dropping down again, that's quoting that pasuk. You see, you need to have a havara, a transfer, or a blast at the beginning and the end, utruak siva ben time. And in the middle of those two, we see the word trua. Okay, so what do we have over here? The Torah tells us trua. And then we know that there's a notion of having something before and something after, which is really simple. So at this point in time, the Gemara has built up a three set, right? Tekiah, then Truah, in inverted commas for the moment, and then Tekiah. That's all the Gemara has proven at this point in time. Now, dropping down to the second paragraph in the Gemara says, Minayin l'shalosh shel shalosh shalosh. Okay, I know at this point in time that the Torah tells us Truah. I know that a Truah by nature, by definition, has to be preceded and followed by a pshuta, a simple note. So where do we get three? Why do we have to have three of those to get to our nine, right? That's what we're trying to build up to. So the Gemara says, Talmud Lama Vahavarta Shofar Truah, Shaboson Zichron Truah, and finally, Yom Truah Yelochem. Three times the Torah says that it should be a day of Truah. Now the only issue is that all these three psukim are not actually said by Rosh Hashanah. They're not saying about Rosh Hashanah. They all mention the word Truah, right? That's our kernel. That's our beginning point. But they're not all said by Rosh Hashanah. Two of them are said by Rosh Hashanah, but one of them is actually said by the Yovel of Yom Kippur. Because in the beginning of Parshas Bahar, when we're about to enter into the Yovel cycle, a Truah is sounded after Yom Kippur, indicating that we've entered into the 50th year. And that's where one of these psukim is coming from. So the Gemara addresses the fact that that's not germane to Rosh Hashanah. So it says the Gemara, Minayin litein esa amur shelzeh v'zeh v'shelzeh b'zeh. How do we know that the Torah is informing us about both institutions? That both on Rosh Hashanah that you have all three truas, and on Yovel you have all threes. Tamud lamar shvi'i shvi'i l'gzeh roshava. Anything in the ninth month in the seventh month, which is Tishrei, follows the same pattern. So therefore, at this point in time, Haketz Shalosh Shein Tesha. This is therefore we arrive at three, which are nine. Which means we now have, we'll call it a hyperlinked three truas. They're going to be in the Chodesh Tishrei three truas. But we also know by definition that those truas need to be preceded and followed by a tzekiah. Hence, what do we have? We have nine, right? So this is what the Gemara has proven at this point in time. We have our basic set of nine. So at this point in time, if a person were to hear nine blasts, three of them truas and three of them and then tekiahs on either side of all of those, that's it. You're done. That's what the requirement midoraisa seems to be. That's the starting point. However, it's a little complicated because it's not absolutely crystal clear what the word trua actually means. Right? If that's all we had, we'd have nine. But the problem is that the word trua is actually a little bit complicated. Because as we know in the Gemara in Source 3, the Gemara actually says the following. Shir trua kishalosh shivavos. How long is a trua? This is Source 3 on page 1. A trua is three yevavos. A word I'm up for discussion as to what it actually means. But a yevavo in basic terms means a short blast. Okay? But which would be understanding? No, the yevavo in this case, interestingly, would be what we would call the trua, and the trua would be what we would call the shvarim in this instance, because the yevavo is the shorter sound, which is in contained. Vahatanya, but there's another brayso which says shiur trua kishalosh shvarim, but the trua is like three shvarim. So we have two. We already have two Tanatic traditions as to what the length of this trua of the Torah actually is. So the Gemara explains, you know where this comes from. Omar Abaye Bahar Vadai Pligi. There's definitely an argument over here. In Bamidbar Yom Trua Yelachem. We know that the Torah tells us that it shall be a day of Trua. That's the word of contention right now. Umetar Gaminon, and the Aramaic of that is Yom Yevava Yehei Lachon. How do we translate the word Trua? Is Yevava. What does the Yevava mean? Well, we have a mixed definition. Uksiv be'ima de Sisra, and we know by the mother of Sisra. Now, the mother of Sisra is the woman who's waiting for her son to come back from the battle after having fought with Devorah and Barak at the beginning of Shoftim. And it says over there, ba'ad ha'chalon nishkafa v'tayah beiv eim Sisra, that she is looking through the window and she's tayabev. She's crying. She's crying, awaiting her son. We're going to discuss this a little more in Rosh Hashanah, the significance of this as a source. So she's sitting there and she's crying. And notice it's the same word as the Targum, right? Yevava. She's crying. Mar sova genuchi gonach, umar sova yiluli yalil. The contention over here is, what type of crying is it? Is it a groaning, a slow groaning? Or is it an intense bursts of quick succession of weeping? And that question therefore plays itself out differently. So now we have at this point in time two definitions: is it going to be slower, going to be faster? So at this point in time, let's keep track. If we're to incorporate both of these, how many would we have? If we were to, let's say, even do both, we'd have. Double. We should be up to 18 at this point in time. But that's, by the way, that's not usually where halacha works. Usually, if there's a machlokas in the Gemara, what would happen is that either we have a rule as to who to paskenak. So if there's a machlokas between two tanaim, we'll say the halacha is like Rabbi Mechaveroi or Mechaveroi, Rabbi Akiva. There's rules of who to paskenak. And even if we don't have that rule, maybe in the Shulchan Aruch, it might be the Mechaver paskens one way, the Ramah paskens another way, and different communities do one thing or the other. When there's usually machlokas, we don't necessarily always do that. We should still be down to nine with one of these. But the interesting thing about this is that's not what we do. Because Rabbi Abahu, on the next page, famously does a very incredible thing with this minhag. This is the top of page 2. Iskin Rabbi Abahu bekezari. Rabbi Abahu in Caesarea made a takon of the following enactment. Tekiah shalosh shvarim trua tekiah. A person should do what we call tashrat. Tekiah, shvarim trua, tekiah. Now, this didn't exist up till now. Right? In the Gemara, we've never seen such a notion beforehand. There's like a third alternative. So the Gemara says, Manoshach, iyalali yalil, liavir tekiah, trua, tekiah. Igenuchi gonach, liavir tekiah, shalosh, shvarim, tekiah. The Gemara is very concerned with this. We've only seen two tracks of what the mother of Sisera is actually doing now. Either she was groaning or whimpering. But that doesn't give rise to a groan whimper, right? A tashrat over here. So where does Rabbi Abahu coming from? The Gemara responds, Misapkole, the Gemara Rabbi Abahu does not know, Igonuchi gonach iyalali yalu. He doesn't know which one it is, so he does both. The Gemara asks, Maskev lo Rabbi Avira. V'dilmo yiluli yohavo v'komafsik shloshu shvarim ben shroi letzikiyah. But wait a second. If it's the one way, if it's going to be the yolil, then you're adding in an unnecessary blast in between. That doesn't work. Tehadar avit tekiyah trua tekiyah. So he says, no, he did the tekiyah trua tekiyah afterwards. Maskev lo Ravina. V'dilmo genuchi gonach yohavo v'komafsik v'trua ben shvarim letzikiyah. So maybe it's the other way around and you're having an extra set of blasts in the middle here. You can't create something new that there's somehow an in between. The harder of it, tekiah shvarim tekiah. So he did all three. He did tashrat, tarat, tashat. Okay. Elo Rabbi Abahu ma iskin. So what was his takana? Iganuchi gonach ha'avde. Iyalil ha'avde. If he thought it was the groaning, he did that. If he thought it was the whimpering, he did that. So why does he have this third one of the two together? Says the Gemara, Misapkole dilmo gonach v'yolil. Maybe in fact he thought it was both. Maybe there was the alternative of the way that a person cries is maybe in such a progression. First the groaning and then the whimpering. Ihachili avid nami ibchos, so why don't you do the other way around? Tekia trua sholosh shvarim tekia. You should do tar shat, which we don't do. The Gemara explains, stama de milsa kimasre inish b'inish milsa bereshe gonach v'hodar yolil. So the Gemara says when a person cries, a person doesn't whimper first. A person first groans when he hears news of that type, Rahman al-Islam, and then whimpers afterwards, and that's the way it is. So what we have over here is a very fascinating thing. Rabbi Abahu is not paskening one way or the other. What is he doing? He's incorporating, and he's in fact introducing a third one. He's saying that you could have the shvarim in the middle, the true in the middle, or the shvarim true in the middle, because he is doubtful as to what was the definition of true looking at the mother of Sisera. So at this point in time, what do we have? At this point in time, what do we have? How many blasts should we have? It should be 30 if we count the true shrine true as two, which is now just to give you a perspective, the beginning. What we say before Musaf is exactly that. What we're doing before Musaf is exactly what Rabbi Abahu was saying. We're doing three times, so we're doing the nine blasts, but we don't know which the nine blasts are. Is it the shvarim as defined as true? Is it the true as defined as true? Or is it the shvarim true as defined as true? And therefore we do all three. One has to question this point with this very unusual halacha is, well, what's the nature of this? What's the nature of what Rabbi Abahu is doing? Is he saying that this is really, this could all count? Or only one of them counts and therefore we're doing all of them in Sofek because we want to make sure we do the right thing? Just a food for thought, and we may come back to this in just a moment. What is the nature of Rabbi Abahu's very unusual halacha of incorporating all three versions? But at this point in time, we now understand at this point why it is that before Musaf we do these 30 blasts. Why? The development of the nine has three options of expression. But now we need to get further.
Why is it based on the way you cry?
Oh, fantastic. Okay, so for those who will be here, God willing, on Rosh Hashanah, in one of the Joshes, this is going to be one of the discussions. And so I'd like to skirt that issue. Also because we're only 30 out of the 100 into understanding what's going on here, but I'd like to address that very much in the coming few days.
Why don't we blow all the time to Kiyosh from to Kiyosh? Why do you have to have it separately?
No.
Because it might only be one.
Meaning...
But you'd be Yotze if you're doing both. Ah. One, you'd be
Yotze
no matter what.
Okay, so Mr. Price and Rabbeinu Tam have a very good question. And we're gonna address that in just a moment. Okay, just a moment, which is a fantastic point. So, up to now, we understood before the Shmoneh Esrei. Now we need to get into the Shmoneh Esrei itself. Into the Shmoneh Esrei itself, because notice the Shmoneh Esrei is going to be a little more complicated. Sure, absolutely. Oh, so before the Shmoneh Esrei, we have the nine tripled, right? However, in the first paragraph on the first page of the Tekiah Shvarim Trua, that actually counts as 4-4-4, because the Shvarim Trua actually counts as 4, even though it's one of the three options. So put it all together. That's one of the confusing point over there. There may be a reason why you count it as two. In just a moment, I'd like to come back to that. So the Gemara says the following, and this gives rise to the notion of the fact that we should actually do it during the Shemoneh Esrei. Because up till now, besides for Rashi's interpretation, there's nothing which said that those tekiyas need to be in the Shemoneh Esrei. Simply, the Torah tells us as Yom Teruah. That's what the Torah told us, and we're doing that, and we're finding the three expressions of that Yom Teruah with the preceding and following tekiyas. Now let's take it further. The Gemara actually on Lamed Aleph, this is in source 5, says, Mishi birech v'akakach nisman eloi shofar tokeh meriyah v'tokeh. Let's say a person did the Shemoneh Esrei, he said the brachos, and then he finds a shofar, meaning he didn't have a shofar accessible at that point in time. What should he do? He should do to the tekiyos. Taino, says the Gemara, the implication is, d'loi havalei shofar beikara. If he didn't have a shofar while doing the Shemoneh Esrei, ha havalei shofar mikara ki shamanahu aseder brachos shamanahu. It must be that if he had the shofar accessible during the Shemoneh Esrei, then of course he should do it. This Gemara is simply working off an inference in the Mishnah that seems to indicate that we should do it during the Shemoneh Esrei. The Gemara has not provided any insight as to why we should do it during the Shemoneh Esrei. For that, we need to actually jump back about 17 blat to a Gemara which is perhaps much more well known. The Gemara says, this is in source 6 on Daf Tesayin, Amar Rebbe Yitzchak, Lama toikim b'Rosh Hashanah? Why do we do tekiyos on Rosh Hashanah? The Gemara is concerned with the question. Lama toikim rachmona amataku? Why are you asking the question? The Torah says pretty explicitly that you should do tekiyos on Rosh Hashanah. Elo lama merian? Why do you do truas? Merian? Rachmona amar zichron truah? The Torah says you should do truas as well. These questions are unfounded, says the Gemara. Elo lama toikim umerian kashen yoshim toikim merian kashen yomdim? Why do you do it twice? Ah, you see, we already talk about twice now. When they're sitting and when they're standing. Says the Gemara, Kedei la'arbev es ha-satan. Kedei la'arbev es ha-satan. In order to confuse the satan. And Rashi adds a clause over here, which is so significant to understanding this whole process. Rashi in the bottom box, Kedei la'arbev, to confuse shelo yastim, that he shouldn't prosecute. Keshe yishma Yisrael machabavin es ha-mitzvos, mistatmim dvorov. When he hears that Israel is so endeared, the mitzvahs mean so much to Israel, therefore his claims are blocked up. This is so significant because part of what we're doing over here is expanding. Part of it is if we have a sofek, we expand it. Rashi is saying that this is part of the idea of the chibur, of the endearment of the mitzvah, and so if we don't just say it the 30 beforehand, we also have it during the Shemoneh Esrei, and somehow that confuses the satan. So at this point in time, let's just clarify. Is sitting and standing, what would you think that means? As we do the tekiyah, sitting and standing, so what would the sitting be? Sitting would be the, which one? Okay, so the most of the Rishonim understand that the sitting means before the Shemoneh Esrei, the Mu'umad means during the Shemoneh Esrei, so therefore, which set is the one which confuses the satan, just to clarify this point? The Mu'umad, the second set, right? Just to clarify, the confusion is coming with the addition. Right, so starting point is the sitting, we did the before Shemoneh Esrei, now we're adding in a second one as part of the Chibur of Mitzvah. Right, so we do it again. Fascinating. So this is the indication of doing it al Seder HaBrocha, so what's called, during the Shemoneh Esrei. You had a question?
No, it's confusing also because most mitzvahs, not every mitzvah, but most mitzvahs, you make a bracha, but you do a mitzvah. It's over. You know, here you're extending everything going through Shemoneh Esrei, after Shemoneh Esrei, whatever. So it is confusing even for the regular person. Besides, I mean, if you take a look at Arba Minim, it's a long thing too. But
yes.
Usually you take the Arba Minim in your hand, you make a bracha, it's over, you put it down.
Yes.
It's most of the mitzvahs are like that.
Correct.
This is
an expansion, exactly. There's a lot of expansion. Part of that is because of the doubt as to what it is, meaning we're trying to do what the Torah tells us, so that's what was happening before. And now we have this extension, which you're right, is unusual, but that irregularity seems to be what's actually functional as the Irbuv HaSatan. That's what's just a fascinating point. That irregularity is something which shows that we're going beyond what we logically dictate. And that's part of the beauty of what's happening over here. But at this point in time, by the way, we don't clarify it after the Shemoneh Esrei. This is just during the Shemoneh Esrei. Yes, correct. As far as we're extending that mitzvah into this over here, which is an interesting question about Tosef.
You don't sit at any time.
Oh.
You're always standing.
So you're going to get into a great point over here. You see, that's why I asked, what are the standing or the sitting? Right, so it's not so simple as would make logical sense that it's the sitting before and the standing during. You have to be sitting, you're standing during the Shemoneh Esrei. Okay, so you don't necessarily have to be beforehand, but it might not be referred to beforehand. Mark.
What gives us the right to extend the mitzvah?
Fantastic. That's a good question. Well, let's put another halachic barrier there, Mark. Let's say what about the Isser of Baal Tosef?
Right.
You know, in general, you don't have the right to start extending mitzvahs. Right. So that's the Tosef addresses this. Tosef addresses why there isn't Baal Tosef. But then your question still comes back: why do we give credit to this? So I'd like to. It's a beautiful Aruch HaShulchan over here which addresses this. And just for a moment to appreciate the beauty of what he's saying, is the Aruch HaShulchan says in Source 7, addressing this specific question, V'atam nire, it seems, dekevon shegozra Torah litkoya gimel pa'amim tekiya tshua tekiya. Since the Torah told us that it's important, there's a mitzvah to have the tekiya tshua tekiya three times, mistoma kivno shebeseder rishon yekablu ol malchusoy. It sounds like, and he's going back to the specific psukim, that the first one is about accepting his kingship, like when you blow before a king. And the second one should be about creating a memory, a favorable memory. And the implication is that the third one should be that it should be like the acceptance of the Torah, where there was a blast of a shofar. And what the Aruch HaShulchan is saying is that in the very way the Torah wanted us to do it, there is the basic notion that it should be acceptance of the yoke, please remember us for the good, and then it linking back to that moment of Matan Torah, that connection point, in the very three tekiyos. And therefore, of course, he said it's natural that we should institute it during the brachas as well. Just because the Torah doesn't talk about the brachas. Shmon Esrei is a later takona, right? Anshei Knesset Gedolah brought it in. He says, but the very underpinnings of those psukim indicating that we should do it match up to what the brachas are formulated as. So when Anshei Knesset Gedolah later on formulate the brachas as following, he says it's only natural to extend it. It just, he's adding a little bit of the spices to it as to this.
But it takes away a little bit from the Arbe Besat Satan. He's saying this is the natural way to do
right.
The mitzvah. It's almost...
Right. He's putting it more into a logical track. You're right. I think it still requires somewhat of a jump over here. But what he's doing is trying to link it to the actual mix itself, which is just a beautiful thing.
That implies that the primary tekiyos are the ones in the davening. The Arvav HaSatan is the earlier one.
No, not necessarily. The way I understood this Aruch HaShulchan is that before the davening is the primary, but he's saying the very notion of those tekiyos match what's going to be the later takon of the Shmon Esrei, which should now incorporate the same ones because they match the ideals of those three sets.
Does he mean that Tashrat is Malchios,
yes.
Hashat is...
Oh,
or
no,
are you doing...
No.
Okay, I'm doing one line of each, and then I'm taking the subject of which it is.
Great, that's the next question right now. Excellent. So that Tosef says what Jonathan is just saying, which is that Baal Tosef doesn't apply when you repeat a mitzvah; it applies when you change the mitzvah. So if I'm wearing five tzitzis, no, that's not a good example. If I take five minim. In a lulav, that's because what have you done? You've changed, you've edited, you've engineered the mitzvah now. You're not engineering the mitzvah over here. You're simply extending, right?
Not when the show we do, like the concept of not talking in between, other than not talking with davening, is because we're saying it's one mitzvah.
Absolutely.
Like the avaminim, you could talk all you want.
Absolutely. That might be also a function of the bracha, just as a significance. I mean, the bracha is covering all of that, but you're right. You're right. The question is also: is it done as part of the chelik of the mitzvah, which it is done more like in this way? So now,
but there are people, for example, who make the bracha on the lulav right before a halel because they want the nanuim to be attached to the bracha. You have that,
right? Because the al seder brachas is actually significant.
If you have a long pause, an extended pause when you make the bracha and you blew shofar, and then you may not blow the next for a long period of time. Why would you have to make another bracha?
Excellent. Okay, so it may be that the brachas of the Shmona Esra actually relate to the shofar itself. I'm going to try to address this. Unfortunately, we have time is marching on very, very fast, and I'd like to just try to just get all these points in just to get an appreciation. So,
we have to fool yourself. Are we fooling ourselves?
Absolutely not. Chibuv. I think it's exactly the opposite, in fact. I would say that the fact that every year we go that extra mile is more confusing The fact that we go that extra mile every year, like Alan was saying at the Sefer Mishnah slot yesterday, the fact that there's an excitement and a sense of adding every year is in fact more of the same of this notion of Irbu Vasatam. It's not about his wait, what's going on. It's the point is that we are always there to extend it. I'd like to just take the next few minutes with your permission. I'm not going to have a chance to read this inside because I really would like to just cover the concepts over here, but it's all here in front of you. But just let's get the bigger picture. What was mentioned just beforehand was, so when we do during the Shemoneh Esrei, so what do you do during the Shemoneh Esrei, right? So the problem is that at this point in time, if we to do a Tekiah al Seder HaBrachos, we have three options of what it should be, right? We have the Shvarim, the Trua, and the Shvarim Trua. So what should you do? There are actually three major tracks in the Rishonim as to what one should do. The Goinim, the Rif, the Rambam bring down a minag that in fact you should do, this is Dr. Huberfeld mentioned before, was that you should do one for each. Tashat, Tarat, Tashrat. One for Malchios, one for Zichronos, and one for Shofos. Which is interesting, because in the end of the day, but aren't you missing out, right? What happens if it was the other one? Did you not do it then on that specific bracha? It doesn't sound like it makes so much sense. And the Rif addresses that. The Rif says a very fascinating thing. This relates to what we were saying beforehand. The Rif says, you know why that is? It's because you've already been Yotze. The bracha you did beforehand and the tekiyos you did beforehand is the main mitzvah. This is the extension. So therefore, it's all right. There's space to choose one or the other. Option number one, says the Rif. However, there's actually a fascinating another option within this Rif, and that is Rav Haigon. Rav Haigon, also from the Goinim, writes a tshuva, a response, and he says the following, that when Rav Bol was making this unusual takana, it wasn't because communities were arguing with one another. This one says, no, you're wrong, it's this way, it's Shvarim, this one says it's Trua. No. Says Rav Haigon, they all agreed with each other. They just had different Masoros as to what it was. But if somebody from the Truatic community was in the Shvarim community, he would be Yotze with the Shvarim. What did Rabbi Abahu do? He simply unified the Minhag that everybody would be doing the same thing. But effectively, you Yotze with all of them, they would agree with one another. So of course, when the Rif says you do one for Malchias, one for Zichronos, one for Shofros, then there's no problem. Because Rabbi Abahu himself would agree with that. That's option number one. Notice that's not what we do. Right? The Rifs and the Minhag is not all we do. Option number two is Rabbeinu Tam, what Mr. Price was actually mentioning, is the Rabbeinu Tam says, let's make it simple. Do Tekiah, Shvarim, Trua every time. Because in the end of the day, you're covered all bases. If it's a Shvarim, it's there. If it's Trua, it's there. And if it's Shvarim, Trua, it's there. Kabbalah didn't seem to like that, remember? The Rabbeinu Tam says you should do that one line at the end of Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros. Tashrat. Simple. Now, Rabbeinu Tam is generally not accepted. It is brought in Shulchan Aruch. It may be, and I'm going to just leave this as a footnote, it may be subject to his opinion as to how it's blown. Rabbeinu Tam is the one who has the opinion that when you do Shvarim Trua, it is blown in what's called Shtei Neshimos, two breaths. That during the Seder Tekiyos, you'll notice, if you listen very carefully, that the Tekiyos before the Shemoneh Esrei, when you hear the Shvarim Trua, it's going to be a little faster, a little closer together than during the Shemoneh Esrei in the regular Minag. There'll be a little break, because during the Shemoneh Esrei, the Chazan will take a breath between the two of them, in deference to the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, because he holds that they're actually somewhat separate. That's why Rabbeinu Tam understands what's called Kol Acher Eno Mafsik. Another voice isn't Mafsik. Another sound isn't Mafsik. So if it's the Shvarim, the fact that there's a Trua next to it doesn't make a difference. If there's a Trua, the fact that there's a Shvarim next to it doesn't make a difference. Why? Because he understands they're two separate things. Most of the other Rishonim will understand that it's all together. It's not a Kol Acher. It's not another voice. It's the same thing. So it doesn't work for Rabbeinu Tam. But the third, and that's perhaps the last minag brought in the Rishonim, I'd like to just go through very quickly with you. And this is in Source 11. This is what we have over here. Ulufum, this is on Source 11, page 3. This is Tosfos quoting the Aruch. Tosfos says the following. Ulufum sugya dekula pirkin. According to the sugya that we've seen in the entire perek, hoya ro'u liskoya b'shas tvila amalchuyos kashrak, kashak, and karak, which is the three versions that we have. One should do on each one all three options, because after all, there are three options as to what it should be. That's what we do. V'chein ha-zichronos, v'chein ha-shofros. Or la'achar tvila kulahu. Or after the tefillah, all of them. Aber kodem tefila loy ashkechan. We didn't find we did it before the tefila. Kirisnan misha berach va'achachach nisman in le'shofar. Ela ashkechan the perik kamad le'el. Lama toikin amiri and kashen yoshin. Toikin amiri and kashen oimdim kedei la'abir v'sasotan. So he points out that it may be that the tekiyas beforehand are not necessarily as integral or germane. It might be the ones after. So I'll get to that in just a second. V'hainu kedeba inan umiu lichora. It seems, nevertheless, Liskoya b'tzvila kain. One should say in the tefillah the following: Amachuyos zichronus shofos kashrak kashak karak. Avokol echad v'chad kedei lotzeis misafek deriyabol. So says the Aruch, which is the minag which we follow. This minag actually isn't brought in Shulchan Aruch. The Mishnah Berurah brings the Shlo says this, and we should say all three at each occasion. Okay, so what do we have over here? The main mitzvah is 9. 9 turns into 30 effectively because the Riyabol is incorporating the 3 options. We now see that there's a value of extending the mitzvah into the Shemoneh Esrei, Al Seder HaBrochos, because it ideologically matches up. And how to do that? 3 options. Do you do one separate for each one? Do you do Tashrat, which incorporates all according to Rebbeinu Tam, in each one of them? Or do we do, as we have the Minhag to do, all 3 in each one? Which is now, by the way, explains why it's different. The paragraph, the 3 lines, are all 3 during the Shemoneh Esrei together, because we want to get one line there, but we don't know which line it is, so we incorporate all 3. As opposed to before the Shemoneh Esrei, where it's 3 separate paragraphs of same ones. And this would also account for during the silent Shemoneh Esrei, which we do in the Young Israel, the same notion. The question really comes, and this is what we'll end with, is the tekiyas after the Shemoneh Esrei. We do either 40 in some shuls, and here we do another 10 after the Shemoneh Esrei. Where does that come from? So the most basic possibility of these last 10 tekiyas that we do are the following. The Aruch HaShulchan brings that there is a mesorah, there's a tradition that the mother of Sisera, where this all started from, cried how many cries? Cried 100 cries. And if you do the math, incorporating all that we have up till now, we have 90. So there is, so right, we did 40 beforehand, 40 during the Shemoneh Esrei with the last minhag of the Aruch. So what should we do? So therefore, to be mashlim, to really find follow the full pattern of the mother of Sisera, what do? We do the last 10 to be able to top up that 100. But there's also another very fascinating insight over here, and that is the insight of the Balaam Or. The Balaam Or, one of the later Rishonim, who had a commentary on the Rif, says a very fascinating thing. Let's go back. When we do it, the tekiyas, what's called Dim Umad and Dim Yushav, we thought that Dim Umad is during the Shemoneh Esrei, you have to stand, and Dim Yushav is sitting beforehand, where you don't necessarily have to be standing. However, says the Balaam Or, it's not that way. Dim Umad is when people are about to leave the shul at the end of the service. Dim Yushav is when people people are not going anywhere during the Shemoneh Esrei. The Balaam Or understands that the original takon of the Gemara was the tekiyas during the Shemoneh Esrei and the 30 afterwards. That was what it was. Later, post-Talmud, there was an institution to incorporate the tekiyas before the Shemoneh Esrei. Why? He says because there were anusim. There were people who, for whatever reason, had to fear that they'd leave shul early. And if they waited that long into the day, they may not hear the shofar. So what do? They incorporated the tekiyas before the Shemoneh Esrei as an addition. Do you see, it's the opposite direction of what we've been doing up to now. Before, we were looking at the before, during, and the extension afterwards. He's looking at the primary idea as during the Shemoneh Esrei, after the Shemoneh Esrei, the Dumur, 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 Yoshav, and then the extension being beforehand, which gives rise to a very fascinating chiddush, which he says, which is why the Gemara never explicitly talks about, it's never explicitly talked about the bracha on the shofar. It's subject to a big machlokes rishonim as to what the bracha should be. Al litkoya, what the bracha should be, says the Balaam Or. The reason why there was in the Talmud it was never discussed is simply because during the Talmud you never had to say a bracha, because the first time you're doing tekiyah shofar was when? In the Shemoneh Esrei, and the bracha of the Shemoneh Esrei covered it. Incredible chiddush, says the Balaam Or. So just from this notion of the Balaam Or, you see an opposite direction of the formulation over here, which is a fascinating notion over here as to the tekiyah shofar. With this gives us a wholesome picture, as when you're doing the different parts, when you're before the Shemoneh Esrei, when you're doing the Shemoneh Esrei, when you're after the Shemoneh Esrei, these come from different areas. The different extensions as to that original kernel, that original mitzvah midrash. I'd like to just end with the words of Rabbeinu Bachaya, just in terms of thought, is that when we often think about shofar, where the notion of shofar is shofar ba'ir milo yira. It's a pasuk in Amos. And when you hear it's the emergency blast, chas v'shalom. When you hear the sirens, everybody's trembling, quaking inside. However, the Rabbeinu Bachai brings a very distinct and different understanding, and that is quoting Bilam. Bilam gives a bracha to Bnei Israel. He tries to give a curse, and he says in Parashas Balak, Usruas Melech Boy, that the truer of the king is with him. When looking at Israel, he's enamored with the beauty of Israel that has a Truas Melech Boy. And the Rabbeinu B'chai says what this means is, what's the word true over here? True is from the word reus. Reus is friendship, closeness, endearment. What does that mean? He's giving a completely different interpretation. That means to say that Israel's so special that when Israel reaches up to Hashem, Hashem reaches back. We have a relationship. The shofar is not just simply about the fear it instills, it's also about the connection. That's why the Rambam says in the Pirush Mishnas in Rosh Hashanah, in the fourth parak, that when we hear a shofar, a person should be afraid of Hashem and flee to Him. Isn't that an interesting concept? Fleeing towards the source of fear. Isn't that an incredible idea? There's a reus, there's a connection through the fear. We hear the shofar, we know there's a lot of work to be done, but through that very same shofar is the point of connection. And that's perhaps an addition to the framework, just the inside workings of this. Thank you very much, everybody. A ksiva v'chasima tov to everybody. Thank you very much for joining. Yes. Yes. Beautiful. So.